On today's BizNews briefing, the Sisulu Foundation asks Cyril to step down. Ramaphosa tabled the presidency budget vote. Gordon Gwana says negotiations on US tariffs are in full swing. And Netflix earnings beat expectations but shares slump. It's Monday, the 21st of July. This is your BizNews briefing. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. The Walter and Albertina Sisulu Foundation has called for President Ramaphosa to step down over corruption in action. They are accusing him of failing to confront the deepening corruption crisis in the country. Dr. Alan Busak, the foundation's chairperson, shares more.
There have been a number of organizations, as you said, that has echoed this call for the president's resignation. Now, if you read the statement, you will notice that the language that we employ is quite serious. And it is serious and strong because the crises that we are facing, not just this one crisis that blew up when Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi made all of those revelations and allegations, but the crises that have been seen across the life of South Africa, politically, socially, economically, and we have come to the conclusion that it is one of the main reasons is the appalling lack of genuine leadership that we have been experiencing from this president almost from the beginning. And so we thought that if you have to begin somewhere, the first thing that needs to happen is for this president to resign.
Meanwhile, last week, Cyril tabled the presidency budget vote before the National Assembly in Parliament in Cape Town. Cyril defended his decision not to formally suspend Minister Senzo Mqunu and to appoint a judicial commission of inquiry to probe allegations of political interference against Minister Mqunu. Ramaphosa gave further examples of commissions that had delivered results in response to those detractors, stating that commissions don't deliver results.
It is therefore strange that some people have voiced strong opposition to the establishment of this inquiry. Some have even said that I should take immediate punitive steps against Mr. Senzo Mqunu on the basis of untested allegations. Not only would this be unfair, but it would also create a very dangerous precedent. Now, on this one, the commission should be allowed to do its work. Some people have even resurrected the tired line that commissions and panels that we have established in the past have produced meaningless results. This view is wrong. It is not borne out by evidence. In 2018, we established the Commission on the South African Revenue Service, chaired by Judge Robert Nugent. The Commission's findings and recommendations resulted in a comprehensive overhaul of SARS. It also resulted in the governance structures of SARS and the operational capability of SARS being revamped. This has enabled SARS to significantly increase revenue collection, improve compliance, and recover substantial sums of unpaid tax. The Commission of Inquiry into the Public Investment Corporation, the PIC, which was chaired by Judge Lex Mpati, exposed serious governance failures and led to far-reaching institutional reforms at the PIC. These commissions resulted in disciplinary actions and the cancellation of unlawful contracts.
ANC Secretary General Fikile Mbalula says Mqunu will remain in the ANC National Executive Committee. Let's dip into his commentary on the ANC YouTube channel.
Senzo is not guilty. So he will answer to whatever that he needs to answer to. And therefore, He has not been found guilty or been charged in any court of law to warrant any steps to be taken against him. Where he is deployed, there are specific accusations that are made and there are processes that have been followed, and the ANC is supporting those processes. The Commission of Inquiry, and at the same time, the step aside on his part as a minister. Even though people debate that step aside, but he has stepped aside with immediate effect to give the processes a chance to unfold. He himself have pronounced that he's ready to appear before the commission and make his own and put his own side of the story. That's what is important. Now, in relation to the ANC, he's a member of the working committee of the ANC. He's not suspended. He's a member of the National Executive Committee. He's expected to execute his responsibilities as required by the ANC. Only if something happened to him in relation to the law, and whether it is arrest and so on, we will then effect changes to his role in the movement. So I explained that he is not affected in the party because, he's expected, and I've deployed him for this weekend here in the Western Cape to do his work as a member of the working committee. And I will continue to do so, to deploy him to execute his task as and when it is required.
In the presidency budget vote, Cyril also said the 30% tariffs imposed by the United States on South African exports are now the subject of active negotiations. Cyril says that the discussions are underway and that we can expect a shift towards more favorable trading conditions.
Last week, we received notification in a letter from President Trump to myself that exports from South Africa to the United States will attract tariffs of up to 30% from the 1st of August 2025. This could have a substantial impact on the products that we export to the United States. We have already seen how just the mere news of the intention to impose tariffs has dampened the ability of a number of exporters from our country to the United States, and we have seen how some companies have had their exports declining by up to 80%. But right at the moment, we welcome the commitment by the US government, since we met them in the White House, and following engagements that we have had with them after their letter, that the 30% tariff is subject to modification pending the conclusion of negotiations between our two countries. Those negotiations have commenced. At the same time, we continue to work to diversify our export markets and to build a more resilient domestic economy. And in this regard, we call on our producers who export goods to be actively involved in diversifying their own markets and to engage and enlist government assistance in various countries where they wish to export to. We continue with our efforts to strengthen our relations with the United States, which still remains a strong investment and trading partner to our country.
Robertson, a small town in the middle of nowhere where a wine farmer claims to have sold a Volkswagen up to e-buy cars.
A farmer.
What car did you really sell them?
A VW.
Right here in Robertson.
Small town, but we know about e-buy cars.
Yeah, but what's a farmer doing with a VW app?
It was just a runaround.
Cool, cover story. And I see you traded it in for this, like a double cab Renault. Well, were they all out of ranges?
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far. At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
South African Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana says the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition and International Relations are hard at work negotiating with the US ahead of the 1st of August deadline. He was speaking on the sidelines of a G7 event in Durban.
I think we, from my understanding, mind you, I'm not directly involved. My colleague from the trade side has been involved, including my colleague from the international relations. To my knowledge, we developed a document which we think is a possibly template for a potential deal.
Can you give us some insight into what that looks like? Because we heard from the central bank governor saying potentially if the current tariffs stay in place, 100,000 jobs could be at stake. What does this document include?
No. The document, I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not familiar with this serious content, but we're trying to exchange in which areas can we make concession for the United States. Mind you, from the U.S. side, is that, by the way, on the service side, they've got a surplus. Uh-huh. We have got a surplus on the trade side. So what we're trying to say, how do we balance that in such a manner that we can achieve an equilibrium between the two nations? It is indeed part of our export to the USA is the automobile industry, which may likely be affected, and in certain circumstances, strategic areas, which will make those areas ghost towns.
Is there anything you can do to potentially offset those losses if a deal is not made?
Not with immediate effect.
Does that concern you? I mean, how do you
feel? Yeah, we are concerned because it's not with immediate effect. If the car assembly plants in South Africa, which are largely exported to the USA, employ, if you include down the value chain, about more than 100,000 jobs.
Mm-hmm. And so then, as a finance minister, I mean, from where you sit, if a deal is not made by August 1st, what is your greatest concern at this point?
Look, my prayer first and foremost is that the deal should be made by August 1st. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we if it's not made, mm-hmm. it'd be useful that we get an extension until we finalize the deal. Mm-hmm. Of course, the US is a huge economy. If we lose a trading partner such as the USA, it's going to have a major impact and create more unemployment in the economy. And therefore, that should worry any Minister of Finance.
Speaking to Bloomberg, US Treasury Deputy Secretary Michael Falkender discusses President Trump's signing of the Genius Act into law and how big he thinks the stablecoin market will grow and how that will translate to Treasury demand. Falkender also talks about whether or not the stablecoin will create a financial stability risk and the difference between cutting interest rates in July or waiting to cut in September.
It's an enormous victory today, and it really sets the stage for us to demonstrate our leadership when it comes to financial innovation. Because what this bill does is it says if we modernize the payment system globally, we now have a digital asset that has rules of the road established by Congress for what backs those those digital assets. It provides enormous amounts of confidence to not only Americans, but our trading partners around the world, who are then willing to make exchanges, to invoice in dollars, and then be paid via stablecoins because they know that it is an asset that has value behind it. Because what is at the back of it? Primarily, it's going to be T-bills. Mm-hmm. And so if indeed it's the case that this expands even further the portion of international trade that is invoiced in dollars and then allows for nearly immediate payment. So, you know, think about it right now. When a lot of these payments are made, if you wire money abroad, you know, it can be 24, 48 hours between when that's initiated versus when the money is received. If it's done on a blockchain, on a distributed ledger blockchain, it could be minutes, if not seconds. And so it's going to enormously hasten the time frame for making payments. It's more secure. It's more private. It's significantly cheaper. And so if indeed this does revolutionize the way that international payments are invoiced and paid, then there should be a flocking to this technology. And if all of that trade, therefore, is even further denominated in stablecoins, then there's going to be demand for the underlying assets, which are treasury securities. And we could potentially see on the order of trillions of additional demand.
So if there is this trillions in additional demand and you have stablecoins backed by treasuries and there's a mass redemption event, doesn't this create some sort of financial stability risk?
I would say the exact opposite, because, you know, you look at treasuries as treasury bills in particular as being the most liquid market, the most liquid asset in the world. And so, you know, even when we've had times of stress, we know how to make sure that the treasury market operates. So that's one thing. The second thing is, because of this legislation providing the full understanding of how these things work, providing, you know, legislative structure to them, if anything, it should reduce any kind of run risk against this asset. So we actually think that this creates a more stable environment for payments and should mitigate any concern about there being a run on the dollar or on treasuries.
On concerns around the crypto markets and specifically President Trump's ties to them, I don't have to tell you that ethics concerns have been raised for the ties that both he and his family have via World Liberty Financial or their own meme coins, et cetera, to this market. How should Americans think about the degree of confidence they should have that regulators in this administration and Republicans within the president's party are making the best choices to make sure this is secure for them financially and not just that it provides some financial benefit to the president's interests?
So, number one, I would point to the fact that this legislation in both the House and the Senate got a massive bipartisan majority. So any notion that the Democrats would sign on to a bill that is somehow going to make it, you know, easier for the president to generate wealth for himself, I think is belied by the fact that we got such strong Democratic support. In fact, what it does is it recognizes that by putting in statute a framework whereby people can, with confidence, engage in international commerce and know that they are receiving a digital asset that's backed by underlying securities that there is faith behind, that you have, you know, the full faith and credit of the federal government behind. If anything, that should bring enormous confidence to the American people that they should indeed consider moving some of their commerce onto a stable coin-backed platform that by which they make payment.
The Biz News portfolio holds Netflix, whose shares slipped despite the company beating earnings expectations. Bloomberg's Lucas Shaw discusses the results, and benchmark capital analyst Dan Kernos explains what concerns are lingering for investors. Shaw and Kernos joined Ed Ludlow on Bloomberg Tech.
What was not to like with Netflix, right, Lucas? This is just like a high bar that's been set by Wall Street, and the company did really well.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the high bar. Look, there was nothing in the results to dislike. It's not like they beat on any metric by some huge amount, but they beat on everything. I think it's a stock that has doubled over the last year. It's a stock that had been up by 40 to 50% so far this year. And even though it is now the most established and most valuable sort of pure play entertainment company out there, it still has this momentum behind it where people think it has a lot of room to grow. And so by most conventional, you know, PDE ratio metrics, it's overvalued. And so if it only slightly beats, people just aren't as excited.
Netflix does this thing where it basically like pre-records its earnings call and then dumps it as a YouTube video. This is what Ted Sarandos had to say on AI.
We remain convinced that AI represents an incredible opportunity to help creators make films and series better, not just cheaper. There are these AI-powered creator tools. So this is real people doing real work with better tools. Our creators are already seeing the benefits in production through pre-visualization and shot planning work, and certainly visual effects.
Lucas, I don't know how much attention the street was really paying to that commentary on AI. There was a lot of focus on the content slate, but did we learn anything new about Netflix's strategy going forward?
Nothing kind of macro high level. Ted has been pretty consistent on his views on AI, which is that it is a tool, it will be used, and it's not just about cost cutting. They think it can make product better. But I think what was new was him talking about using it on a show. Most of these Hollywood companies have been very wary of kind of sharing how they're using AI, unless it's in, you know, sort of a gimmicky way, like they're going to de-age someone for a character, for a movie or show. Nobody gets too worked up about that. But this, along with this Amazon show House of David, are probably the two highest profile examples, just given how important Netflix and Amazon are to the ecosystem.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on the global and local front. Thanks, as always, for watching.